This conference is being recorded.
Okay. Welcome, everyone, to the September webinar of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. This webinar today is called The Long and Winding Road, Building Support for National Climate Policy and Opportunities for the Southeast. And I'd like to introduce you to our speaker today. We can advance to the first slide, please. Jennifer Renix is Southern Alliance for Clean Energy's Federal Policy Director and works out of our Asheville office. Jennifer joined Southern Alliance in 2006, and she oversees federal policy work for the organization, serving as the primary liaison between SACE's programs and our region's congressional offices in Washington, D.C., as well as throughout the states. Her primary focus is educating policymakers and their staff on the Southeast challenges faced by global warming impacts and the clean energy solutions that are possible through federal climate and energy policy. Jennifer currently serves on the steering committee for One Sky, the national organization working on climate and energy. It's a collaborative national campaign, and they are focused on delivering bold climate and energy policies by 2010. Jennifer is an experienced advocate with years of work in the nonprofit world. She has a master's of Science in Environmental Policy from the University of Michigan and a Bachelor of Arts in Anthropology and Environmental Studies from Tufts University. So welcome everyone to our webinar, and at this time I'd like to turn it over to Jen Renix.
Thank you, Ula, and I'd like to thank everyone for taking some time to join us today. Just first here, as we get started, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about our organization in case this may be the first webinar you're joining. The Southern Alliance for Clean Energy has been working throughout the Southeast for more than 20 years, and our primary focus is seeking global warming solutions through clean energy opportunities. And we are working in multiple states across the region. We have five offices and staff throughout the area, and we work at multiple levels, federal, state, and local levels, on a variety of programs and initiatives. And so for more information, you will certainly see our logo on our website on every slide of this presentation, but we are at cleanenergy.org, and so we encourage you to visit us there and check us out. Next slide, please. As the title of this webinar suggests, the road to a climate policy, both here in the United States and abroad, has been a long and winding one. And it's been nearly 200 years since scientists first described the phenomenon that we now know today as the greenhouse effect. And then you skip forward many years, and it's been over 50 years since we've been monitoring atmospheric levels of carbon dioxide. And that image there makes it very clear what is not visible to the naked eye, that rates of carbon dioxide have been steadily growing, and our understanding of them has also been steadily growing. Next slide, please. The momentum has continually gradually built, and while few people in 2002 may have paid attention to the fact that a news report about an ice shelf the size of Rhode Island broke off from an Antarctic peninsula, and there have been other ones. This was one that made quite big news at the time. Just a few years later, of course, most of the world watched as the Western Hemisphere experienced one of the busiest, if not the busiest, hurricane season on record, with a number of firsts. There were 28 named storms, 15 hurricanes, 4 Category 5 storms, and, of course, Hurricane Katrina. So all of these signs and symptoms were building up. Next slide, please. And many of us ask, hopefully now, is the time finally at hand to develop a climate policy? And a few years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that carbon dioxide is, in fact, a pollutant that can be regulated by the EPA under the Clean Air Act. And the president has called repeatedly for a cap-and-trade-style program to reduce global warming pollution. So it would seem the time is at hand. Just this week, you can see from the quote there, he addressed the United Nations specifically about climate and climate change. So I'd like to spend the next few slides here looking at where the climate policy process is today after more than 100 years of studies, thousands of pages of reports, and countless speeches encouraging action. Where are we? And I'm going to do this for a few slides by taking a look at the numbers. So next slide, please. from an international and global perspective. It's been 17 years since international negotiations began. The idea of seeking a convention on climate change, a treaty, a binding treaty. 183 nations, that's the number that has ratified the Kyoto Protocol as of February of this year. And you can see by the map, there is one industrialized nation still yet to ratify, and that's the United States. Australia was with us there for many years, but when the current prime minister took office in December of 2007, he immediately ratified the Kyoto Protocol. So we stand alone among industrial nations now. Next slide, please. On the domestic policy front, it's been 21 years since some of the first hearings were held in Congress. And along that path, there were 8 bills introduced, a climate bill specifically, just in the last few years. Only 4 votes on climate bills to limit greenhouse gas or global warming pollution. Some have been in the Senate, only 1 in the House. And the sum total has led to 1 successful vote to limit greenhouse gas emissions, and that was this year when the House of Representatives voted on a bill that we'll talk about here in a few slides. Next slide, please. So while many states have tired of waiting for the federal government to establish climate policies, numerous states and even local governments began to take the lead. And as you can see, there have been 21 states that have enacted climate action plans at the state level, whereas only 12 actually have actual reduction targets. And then there's even another number, 31 states have reached beyond their borders to enlist neighboring states in collaborative efforts. And those would include things like the West Coast Governor's Initiative, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative in the Northeast, and others. Next slide, please. And with even more reach, more ambitiously, there are two-thirds of the states, 36 states, have also set complementary clean energy standards and goals. And this requires, for instance, utilities to generate a certain percentage of electricity from renewable sources by a given date. And the standards range from modest to ambitious, and the definitions of renewable energy may vary. Each of the states pictured in the top map has taken a definitive step to reduce fossil fuel consumption and create opportunities for clean energy businesses. And you can see, unfortunately, there is a noted lack of shading in the southeastern region of the top map there. Despite strong regional potential, as the lower map shows us, I know it's you can't read the key, and that's not important, but what I wanted you to see is this is a map from the National Renewable Energy Lab. It is showing renewable energy generation throughout the country. And as you can see, the Southeast has quite a few green dots, which represent bioenergy, as well as some other dots in there. So every state, according to this map, has not just potential, but actual generation. Next slide, please. we also released a report confirming some of what the NREL map there showed. In February, we released a report called Yes, We Can, Southern Solutions for a National Renewable Energy Standard. And our analysis suggests that utilities across 11 southeastern states can tap into clean energy resources to meet a significant percentage of the electricity power demands. And if you're more interested in learning more about this report, there was actually a past webinar devoted exclusively to this report, and that was in March of this year. And then you can find information about that. We'll repeat it at the end again, but under cleanenergy.org multimedia webinars, we have an archive of all past webinars, and we encourage you to check out both this one as well as others. Next slide, please. But as I mentioned, our report concluded that near-term renewable energy resources can generate the electricity we need to meet what we consider a modest standard, 15% by 2015, 25% by 2025. And just for example there, the bracket shows in South Carolina, the long-term feasible renewable potential could supply 242% of the current electricity consumption. And obviously, those numbers vary by state. Not all states have quite that potential. In North and South Carolina, a huge lion's share is coming from offshore wind, which, of course, is longer term. There are no offshore wind turbines at present, but it still shows you that there is very strong potential throughout our region. But despite this strong potential, there is only one southeastern state that has passed a standard, and that is North Carolina, which passed a modest 12.5% by 2021 standard back in 2007. So our organization feels that it's very important in order for the rest of the Southeast to catch up and tap into this clean energy economy and to avoid a patchwork quilt of policies and programs. A comprehensive federal climate and clean energy policy is definitely still needed. So what would a comprehensive policy like this need to look like? Next slide, please. Our organization sees an effective policy like this having three primary pillars. The first and the one that probably gets a lot of the most attention would be a cap on greenhouse gas emissions or global warming pollution that sets a price for polluting and it sets a limit on the amount of pollution allowed. Another pillar would be a renewable energy standard. This would help promote American-made energy and also stimulates renewable energy development. And then finally, an efficiency standard as well, because that not only saves consumers money, but allows us to tap into what should be considered our first fuel, energy efficiency. And so these three pillars are what scientists and analysts indicate is needed to safely reduce global warming pollution levels and incentivize clean energy business at the same time. So how is this policy that we need faring through the legislative process and regulatory process in Washington? Next slide, please. In May of this year, the chairman of the House Energy Commerce Committee, Mr. Henry Waxman, released a combined climate and energy bill called the American Clean Energy and Security Act. You'll see there it includes both emission reduction targets as well as energy efficiency and renewable energy standards. While the carbon reduction targets do approach scientific recommendations, there are some concerns. The bill includes considerable offsets, which would slow the actual carbon reductions for some time, and unfortunately a vast majority of the pollution credits are allocated for free, which really becomes somewhat of a perverse incentive to continue polluting. And the combined efficiency and renewable energy standard called the SERES, that's somewhat problematic as well. Next slide, if you will, please. You can see from the map here on the next slide that many southeastern states have partial exemptions from complying. And when you couple that with existing standards and goals and the opportunity to use energy efficiency to comply, our analysis of the series suggests that little or no new renewable energy development might actually result. So that is unfortunate. This is taken from a blog post that was posted back in the spring, specifically analyzing the ACES bill. And unfortunately, since the energy efficiency resource standard portion of the bill is incorporated, the same utilities that get exemptions for renewable energy would, of course, get exemptions from energy efficiency, which then means even less savings for customers there. Next slide, please. So although we are hopeful that the American Clean Energy Security Act will be strengthened as it moves through Congress, SACE and many of our allies supported its passage as a step forward. It did, in fact, pass from committee in May of this year, and then it passed the full House in June of this year. And that was the picture I had earlier showing for the first time a vote was taken in the House of Representatives on climate, and it did, in fact, pass. And there's more information, complete vote counts available, of course, online with thomas.gov and through plenty of other organizations that track the votes. Next slide, please. So meanwhile, the Senate Energy Committee has also been at work this year on legislation that could have an impact on climate pollution. It's important to note that the Senate Energy Committee did not develop a climate bill. There are no carbon reduction targets in this legislation. Those are still to come from a bill from the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. We hope as soon as next week is what we're hearing. But the legislation that did pass from this committee back in June did include a weak renewable energy and energy efficiency standard, as well as a few other provisions there, increasing building efficiency standards and investments in research. But again, just like with our analysis of the SERES bill in the House, it indicates that little new renewable energy development would result, and for many of the same reasons. As you can see, it's an even lower standard, only 15% by 2021 as opposed to 20% by 2020. Next slide. So looking ahead on the road to climate policy, Senate climate legislation is expected soon, but the timetable for action is uncertain. There are multiple committees that will weigh in. As I mentioned, the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee will be the committee to actually produce a climate bill, and then it is our hope that all of these various pieces will be pulled together for full Senate consideration in a comprehensive package. But there is a very crowded table at present, as I'm sure everyone on this call is well aware. Healthcare has been a dominant issue for Congress and the administration, and healthcare is only one of the other competing issues. Of course, there are plenty of other funding and spending issues with appropriations, as well as finance reform and other issues that are certainly important as well. So many things are crowding the plate, and the outcome of what we hope will be a near-term vote is also uncertain. As you know, the Senate has taken this up several times, as I mentioned before, and has yet to successfully pass it. So meanwhile, if we can go to the next slide, we may actually find ourselves on a dual path for reducing climate pollution. There is a possibility of climate action through regulation as well of or in addition to legislation. Back, as I mentioned earlier, back in 2007, the Supreme Court ruled in Massachusetts versus EPA that the federal agency was required to regulate carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases as pollutants under the Clean Air Act. And while the Bush administration slow-walked this process for its final few years in office, the Obama administration has moved quickly. They issued an endangerment finding this spring, which said greenhouse gases represent a significant threat to public health, and that has initiated a regulatory process for reducing emissions, perhaps without congressional action. So my organization and many others participated in the public comment process this summer, and we do encourage the process to continue, both as an incentive for Congress to act, as well as a fallback if Congress fails to act, although we do believe, as many do, that legislation might ultimately be more accepted than the command and control dynamic that can result from federal regulation. But if Congress fails in its duty to step up, then there would still be provisions moving forward. And there is already regulation in process. Many of you may be aware that just a few weeks ago, the administration announced new proposed rules that would limit greenhouse gas emissions from vehicles and increase vehicle efficiency standards. So these are already happening, and these are positive steps, but these measures are just simply not enough to send a clear signal to the international community that the world's biggest polluter, historically as well as up there in present standards, is serious about reducing its global warming pollution. Next slide, please. And right now, there are two international gatherings that are literally happening this week. This week is being called Climate Week. Earlier in the week, world leaders gathered at the UN in New York City to discuss the urgency of consensus on international climate policies. I hope many of you were able to watch clips of it and hear about it. And today in Pittsburgh, heads of state are beginning to gather for the G20 summit, and among other things, they will be discussing how you can green economic recovery efforts, and these are certainly steps that lead us on the road to Copenhagen. Next slide, please. And so, finally, in December of this year, President Obama and nearly 200 other world leaders will gather in Copenhagen for an 11-day conference, and this conference has one overarching goal. We are hopeful that international governments will reach a global agreement to limit global warming pollution, and this would become a successor to the 1997 Kyoto Protocol. So, as you can see, as I have laid out here on this long road, we have federal and international actions pending after many years and decades of work here. The coming weeks and months are going to be very, very important, and there has never been a better time for citizens, businesses, elected leaders to rise to the challenge and get involved. Next slide, please. And apparently this call to action goes both ways, because while some businesses, such as Alcoa, Duke Energy, have joined with environmental organizations such as the Nature Conservancy and the Environmental Defense Fund as members of what's known as the U.S. Climate Action Partnership, and they are advocating that the federal government enacts national climate legislation. We have also seen actions and events that favor the status quo. And this was a busy summer. In July, lobbyists who work for the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity acknowledged the responsibility for a series of forged letters to Congress that was urging votes against the House Energy and Climate Bill. And a bit later in the summer, some fossil fuel proponents launched a campaign called Energy Citizens to host rallies. They were complete with banners and signs and even T-shirts. You can see from this picture here, it would suggest that many of the audience chose to wear the same shade of yellow T-shirt that night. So these were very much staged rallies, and those voices were certainly being picked up and being heard. So clearly the stakes are high, and policy outcomes for climate and energy will impact each and every one of us. So I'd like to spend the last few minutes here of this webinar talking about ways to ensure that your voice can be heard in this debate as a citizen, as an activist, as another environmental organization, as a business. We'd like to help your voice be heard. Next slide, please. So there are several ways that you can get involved on your own that take just a few minutes of your time. For example, you can make a call. We have been told time and again that a phone call is worth more than an email. In fact, some use the metrics that one phone call is worth 1,000 emails in terms of importance and ranking in congressional offices. And I just want to stress, you don't have to be an expert or offer a long explanation to register your opinion. SACE and other organizations, we can certainly help you with talking points like the ones listed on the screen right here. But, you know, even this degree of detail is not necessary. If you call and simply state, you know, I'm a citizen of this state, I'm concerned about the impacts of global warming, and I want my elected leaders to address this issue with a strong, comprehensive clean energy and climate bill, that will be noted and that will be taken into account. So, you know, please contact Congress, help push the president. Let's make sure people are hearing us. And the South has often been viewed as a stumbling block in implementing climate and energy policies. So, you know, our calls here from the Southeast are certainly heard, and it will perhaps be even more impactful in Washington, D.C. for our Southern voices to be elevated. And there are some other five-minute methods, if you will, of involvement, writing a letter to the editor, tapping into the emerging world of social media. There's a whole bunch of them listed there. I'm sure some people on this call use Facebook or Twitter or blog. And all of these are ways to help get the message out. Next slide, please. And another very quick way that you can help lend support is through two sign-on letters addressed to the Senate that the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy is currently working on. And I'd like to ask my colleague, Tony, to say just a few words here about these letters.
Thanks, Jen. Yes, we have two letters that are currently on our website right now. One is a coastal climate letter, and this letter is addressed to Senate leadership, and we're asking them to address the economic and environmental imperatives of protecting our southeastern coastal communities and our local economies here, and we're urging the Senate to take leadership and develop legislation that builds upon the American Clean Energy and Security Act of 2009. This letter will actually be hand-delivered to all of our Southeast senators in mid-October when we go up there to visit our Southeast senators. So another letter that SACE is promoting is the Renewable Energy Standard Strengthening Letter. And these two letters are separate, yet they're complementary. This RES, or Renewable Energy Standard Strengthening Letter, is encouraging folks in renewable energy businesses, some farmers, forest owners, academics, et cetera, to join with us to ask Senator Harry Reid to support a robust national renewable electricity standard that will benefit our region. So if you're interested in endorsing this letter, we could really would really appreciate your support. You can find both under the position statements at that URL that's online, on the screen, which can also be found under cleanenergy.org, policy room, then position statements. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Okay, go to the next slide. Those past two slides are things that I consider sort of five-minute actions. You know, they are things that don't take too long, and we'd certainly love your support. But if you have more time and energy and you can get more involved, I would urge you to tap into some of the vast citizen networks and campaigns that have formed around climate action. One of those is an organization that we are a supporting partner of and was mentioned earlier in the call, One Sky, a national climate campaign to pass climate legislation by next year. And One Sky has a variety of events that are upcoming, and these are all going to require citizen support to be successful. So you can host a climate action party in your home or place of business. You can become a climate precinct captain. There are many things happening right now that we would certainly love your support on here in the Southeast and around other parts of the country as well. Next slide. There are other networks and campaigns happening as well. These are just the tip of the iceberg here, just a few to list. There's PowerShift coming up. The regional summits are going to be happening in the middle of next month. The end of next month, the organization 350.org, some of you may remember it from an earlier iteration. It was Step It Up back in 2007. Now it is 350.org. It is international, and this is a day of climate action, helping to focus attention on the need to keep our atmospheric levels of carbon dioxide concentration below 350 parts per million. It's a little bit of a scientifically wonky concept here, but it's a simple number, 350, and we have to stick to that target or below to stay in what science believes is the safe realm. So that is another huge day of action coming up. There are literally thousands of events all over the world in all of our southeastern states. There are plenty of opportunities to tap in. You don't have to be a leader. You can simply show up, and if you want to strike out on your own and start a new event, that's great too. And finally, the Tick, Tick, Tick campaign, which is trying to help put a timeline and price tag, if you will, on getting involved and getting involved soon. And as you can see, there are websites for all of these organizations, and you know, we would encourage your support and your outreach on these as well. And next slide, please. And finally, because we know that the development and then the implementation of climate and clean energy policies is going to be a multi-year process, I strongly encourage each of you to stay involved all the way to the voting booth. I encourage you to do your research before Election Day, know who the clean energy candidates are, because quite simply, passing a climate and energy bill, which is huge, and it is something that we are all, many of us, working very diligently to see happen, that is not exactly the finish line. That's the end of the first heat, and then we certainly have more work to go. The implementation and defense of this climate bill is going to be a huge portion of our time moving forward. So we certainly want people to get involved, to stay involved, and to keep helping to make sure that our policy leaders are working towards clean energy policy now and in the future. So as you can see, there are many ways to support climate and energy policies right now as we work towards this. And I'd like to turn it over to Ula to finish us off here with our next slide.
Great. Next slide, please. So I thank you very much, Jennifer. This is an excellent overview and back history on where we are and where we've come from. So thank you very much for that. Another way that I wanted to encourage folks on this webinar to support clean energy is to become a member of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. We really value and thrive on your support of our work, and your support makes it possible for us to do all of the great things that Jen went over, and if you've been on past webinars, you know that we've got many, many programs in the works to advance clean energy and reduce global warming pollution in our region. So thank you very much for considering becoming a member. And as a member, you'll receive timely action alerts about the important work we're doing, and you'll also receive our quarterly e-newsletter. And we also have a new feature, a blog, that we'd like to direct your attention to called Footprints, and we are updating this very regularly. There is a small widget that you can grab and put it on if you do Google, you can put it on your Google homepage, or you know, you can embed these widgets in a lot of different places, but it's a way to stay up to date with the blogs that are being posted. So this is, you can also grab the link, the image that Jen showed earlier on the social networking sites can enable you to simply repost that blog if you're excited about what we've written, and you can put it up on Facebook or Twitter or any place else. So please do help us spread the word by using that free great resource that we've just come up with. So I'd like to thank you all very much for taking time out of your busy day to join us for this webinar, and please join us again in the future. We are doing these webinars on a regular monthly basis to bring you breaking latest news on the issues. And this webinar will be online by Monday, September 28th, so you can find it on our website, both the audio portion and the presentation that Jennifer shared with us today. So now we're going to discontinue.